Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Randy Kreger. So, can you tell me a little bit about your work in the arena of disabilities, please?
Sure. I grew up with two parents with personality disorders. My mother had borderline personality disorder, and my father had narcissistic personality disorder. And I wondered what the effect of their parenting had on me. And so in 1996, I began researching and writing a book on that. And I came up with book with Paul Mason, a therapist, called Stop Walking on Eggshells, which became very popular, was one of the first books of its type, and ended up selling over a million copies in 14 languages.
So how does narcissistic personality disorder tend to affect a person and those around them?
Well, let me just read you off a couple of the traits. A person is very, very self-important, and they exaggerate their achievements and talents. They're preoccupied with fantasies of unlimited success, power, and brilliance. They believe that they're special and unique. They require excessive admiration. They've got a sense of entitlement, unreasonable expectations of especially favorable treatment. They exploit people, take advantage of others. One of the most notable traits is that they lack empathy, that they are unwilling or unable to recognize or identify with the feelings of other people, which is really remarkable considering that we can see that in animals. They are often envious of others, and they show arrogant, haughty behaviors and attitudes.
So what happens when these needs to be admired and respected and put in positions of power aren't met? How do they react?
They react to something called, not surprisingly, narcissistic rage, or sometimes depression. What happens is that most of the time they're covering up feelings of unworthiness. Not always. Sometimes they were treated like little princes or princesses, and they do have high feelings of self-worth. But a lot of the times they're covering up feelings of worthlessness, and they wear kind of a mask that they believe themselves, so that they cover it up so well that they cover it up even to themselves. So unlike the rest of us who can feel that low self-worth, they can't even feel it themselves. So they kind of get into a rage that they don't know how to deal. So they're kind of like cold-blooded animals that can't regulate their own temperature. So I don't mean to be the pejorative cold-blooded. What I mean is that they need other people to satisfy that need for self-worth by treating them in that entitled way.
So might they have this tendency to romanticize past experiences? Say they worked in a job with relative position of power, might they think that they're entitled to be something above the rest of us mere mortals.
Absolutely. Above mere mortals is about it.
And how can we as a people who face someone with this tendency keep from letting it consume us? How do we keep from taking it personally and recognizing it as a mental health disorder?
It depends upon... Excuse me a second. It depends upon what our relationship is to the person with narcissistic personality disorder. Is this like a leader? Is this a coworker? Is this a boss? Is this a husband or wife? Is this, you know, some other kind of relative? Really depends. Which of those you want me to tackle?
Little of everything in general. How can a person...
Well, the first thing that we have to be able to do is we have to be able to see the emperor without his clothes. You know, we have to be able to see through. The narcissist does a good job of impressing people right away. He or she talks a good talk, makes a good impression. So we have to see through that and look at the details. A lot of times it takes some time for us to be notice that. So, for example, a person can get elected based on a bunch of blather that's not true. Or if you're starting a relationship with somebody, they can, you know, boast about things they've achieved that they really haven't achieved that you may not know until later. Or, you know, I've gone skiing, you know, I'm... blah, 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 and, you know, maybe they tried on a pair of skis once in a store. So that is it. Also, we have to not take it personally when they treat us. I haven't even gone into how they treat people. But they need people for what we call narcissistic supply, and that's the adoration and that's the adulation. And if you stop giving them that, if you have been giving them that and you stop, they get really mad and they devalue you. And if you get devalued and you take it really personally, you could get really upset unless you understand what that's about. So, for example, if you have a relationship with somebody and all of a sudden you're kind of old news and they start devaluing you and they start having a relationship with somebody else, you have to remember that it's really not about you.
So it's a constant need for reinforcement in the relationship sense.
Absolutely.
What message would you send to the community about keeping a cool head when it comes to dealing with such people?
I would say the other most important thing is they will belittle you, criticize you, and blame you because they need to feel superior. So in order to feel superior, they need to make you feel inferior. So that will be a running theme. I know somebody, for example, I'm writing a book right now about narcissism, and he's a narcissist. So he told me the other day, I already know everything there is to know about narcissism. So he runs a board for narcissists and borderlines. Like, he didn't need to know anything about narcissists. So, you know, and then I put some stuff about my book on the board, and he could do that better. He could do this better than me. He could do that better than me. He could do this better than me. Everything that I did, you know, his volunteers knew more about borderline disorder than me. You know, and I just had to laugh. I mean, you just have to laugh. I think, you know, having a good sense of humor about it all. You just kind of, people with narcissistic personality disorder have the emotional development of about a five-year-old. They're at about a five-year-old level. So I think when they throw a temper tantrum, or, you know, they don't have a sense of ethics yet, you just kind of have to just laugh. That's what I kind of do. When they make your life miserable, laugh.
Well, if they don't have a sense of ethics by the time their brain is fully formed, chances are they're not getting one.
Chances are that they're not getting one. Well, lacking empathy. The lacking empathy, I think, is really interesting because they've actually done brain scans, and there's a little place in our brains where I guess the empathy lies. And sure enough, you know, they can't find it in both antisocial people with antisocial personality disorder and people with narcissistic personality disorder. So I personally think that's really interesting because we find the people with borderline personality disorder, people who have a great deal of problems containing their emotions, have I can't be accurate, so we'll just say they have an oversized limbic system. Their emotional centers in their brain are big, and their little logical centers are puny. So we're discovering that a lot of this is really in the brain.
So how does one know if a person actually has narcissism or if they're just coming across as being pompous or arrogant about a given subject?
Well, there's a difference between being narcissistic and having narcissistic personality disorder. The best way for me to explain narcissistic personality disorder really is to use the example of Donald Trump, because it's so well known that people remark on his personality. They don't just kind of talk about him as if he's just kind of a little extreme in some cases. You might say, well, somebody just acts a little boastful, or somebody just acts a little entitled, or somebody just acts a little bit without empathy or a little self-centered. It's become part of the national conversation because it's to the extreme, and there are extreme examples. And I'm not talking politically here. Just the fact that it's a national conversation, apart from any of his policies or anything like that. Well, a person with narcissism might, for example, not think about other people and might just think only of themselves. A person with narcissistic personality disorder would totally lack empathy for others. And, for example, you might lose a relative and they might still get mad at you because you couldn't go to an event, a special event that they had. So they can't put themselves in your shoes. So they have an inability to do that versus being self-centered. So another example would be feeling special and being entitled. So, for example, if you feel really specially entitled, there's been in the news people going and spending all of this money to get their kids into a great school. Now, I don't know whether those parents are narcissistic or not, or just whether they're rich, but a narcissist very much feels that they don't have to play by the rules. Now, maybe your average narcissist, or excuse me, a narcissist might take credit for somebody else's work in a workplace, or maybe they might cut in line, or maybe they might take somebody else's reservation at a restaurant. But somebody who would really go to the extreme to have somebody else go in and take an exam for their son or daughter, or Photoshop their picture in without an ounce of questioning whether or not that's the right thing to do. Of course, you can't just look at that by itself. I mean, it's got to come with a big cluster of symptoms, and you can't just have one. You got to have many, and it comes with other caveats. So that you can't just take that in and of itself. I can really only talk about dealing with people one-on-one, because that's what I specialize with. I think you have to realize that you're dealing with an emotional five-year-old and going off and roaring back at an emotional five-year-old when they're raging at you doesn't really do anything. What's happening is that the narcissist isn't getting what they want at the moment, and they don't understand your point of view. You know, it's like the five-year-old doesn't understand, why aren't we stopping the car now to get a meal? Just because, you know, they can't understand that we have to be at a certain place. You know, we can't be late to so-and-so's wedding.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Whether you're hosting friends for a night in, exploring new restaurants and breweries in town, or going out to your favorite watering hole, please drink responsibly. Designate a sober driver, call a taxi, a friend, or just stay over. Thank you for always driving sober. A message from Arrive Alive, Drive Sober.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard a little bit about narcissistic personality disorder from Randy Krieger. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Gordon Porter of Inclusive Education Canada. So what can you tell me about Inclusive Education Canada?
Well, Inclusive Education Canada tries to advocate the way in which kids with disabilities, but actually any kind of diverse needs, can be accommodated in their neighborhood community schools and learn in a common learning environment with other children. We're all about trying to promote that, both based on principle as well as practical and research-based educational approaches.
So what are some of the common needs you see in schools that need to improve things?
You mean what do schools need to do to improve their ability to be inclusive?
Yes.
Okay. Well, first of all, teachers need to accept that this is a mandate that they should work toward. That means policy leadership from the Ministry of Education and their local school authorities. And teachers need support to figure out how to do it. School principals need to provide leadership in the individual schools. If inclusion implies that children are included with their peers in classrooms and in other activities around the school, so if that's the case, and when the needs of the child are distinct, that classroom teachers need some support in figuring what to do to accommodate those needs. Teachers need to have reliable and effective processes, collaboration, people to help them figure out what the problems are and what to do about them. So it's a complicated situation, and it's not simple, but it's pretty straightforward. It's helping teachers determine the best path forward to teach all the children who would be in their class. And the powerful thing about it is that these kids live in families that live in the neighborhood. You know, most kids go to a local community school, and children with special needs or disabilities, if they go to the same school, they're part of the same social group that forms their community. So it's not like it's something strange and unusual to see happen.
So
it's a natural kind of process, and gearing up the capacity of the school to accommodate the children, just like the families do in their home, is a very practical and quite realistic thing to do.
So are there any challenges in this work?
Well, of course, many challenges. I mean, children have lots of different needs. Teachers need to have a high level of skill, and they need training. And most particularly, recognizing that no teacher is going to be able to be trained in advance for all of the needs of the children that they'll face in, a 30-year career. There need to be support structures built into the way the schools operate. So you don't train a teacher 5 years or 6 years in university, send them into a school and say, there, you know what you need to know for the next 30 years. You have to ensure that there's lots of professional learning opportunities. When teachers need it, they get coaching and mentoring and co-teaching. They get help in problem solving. We have to have a much more collaborative kind of school than the one that people think about in a more traditional sense, where there's a class of 25 or 30 students and one teacher who is expected to know what to do to meet all their needs. I think we recognize it's more complex than that at this point in time.
So, to look at the converse side of things, in your time working in inclusive education, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
Oh, there have been many success moments. My experience, and in the early days of working in inclusive education here in New Brunswick, where I live, I was involved in a very practical level in supporting inclusion to move ahead. And I think the most compelling thing I can say is that in every single example, when the teachers who knew the child and the parents and experts like the psychologist and others, speech pathologists and so on, sat down together and would plan what was realistic for the child to accomplish or to learn, say, in the next 6 months, and put that down, almost without exception. I can't think of exceptions, but I would acknowledge there may have been some. But without exception, the child did better than what people expected in terms of learning, skills, knowledge, ability to communicate, to do all the things that those people who knew the child best had set out as goals. Children have outperformed the expectation that people have for them when they're included. And my explanation for that is that adults invariably believe that progress will come from the things that they do to help the child succeed and to grow and advance. When in fact, the most powerful force in the child's life and the most powerful tool, I think, in the inclusion program is the other children in the class. When a child with special needs, maybe communication or behavioral challenges, whatever it might be, is in a classroom with other children, a peer group from their own community, and they're there, just think of it, from preschool to kindergarten to elementary school to middle school to high school. That's probably 12 to 14 years of public education, 5 days a week, 39 or 40 weeks a year, day after day after day. The effect of being with and growing up, being nurtured, challenged, probably sometimes frustrated by a peer group is the most powerful influencer on the child. And it helps explain the development of language and social skills and interest in learning that we see when we have successful inclusive education. We need to really understand that the power of inclusion is, in fact, being included with your peers. It's not that having skilled teachers isn't important, it is, but I think, again, adults tend to think that the progress of kids comes from their work with the child and don't fully appreciate and recognize the power that comes with the influence and the effect of the other children on the child's life.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
One could argue, my friends, that narcissism is one of the hardest to recognize and hardest to deal with of all classes of disability. Sort of mentality that says, it's my world, you're just living in it, is really something that has people lording themselves over others, which, regardless of ability level, should never be the case. There's a fine line between showing strength and confidence in one's abilities, and taking that to extremes and overbearing levels. And this would have a tendency to alienate those around. And that just leads to isolation, which in itself is a whole slew of mental health issues can be associated with that. For the truth is, a person with narcissism may find it very difficult to accept that they're not the center of the universe. They're not entitled to run a company simply because at one time they may have done something in relative power. But looking back on it, you must ask the question, was this really all that it was cracked up to be? Because I worked in one setting, does that automatically make me qualified to be running the show? It's an interesting question, my friends. and one with no simple answer. But the truth is, there can be this sense of entitlement in almost anyone at one time or another. We feel our needs and our wants aren't being respected or understood. We might have a tendency to lash out and get angry. And that really is very tragic, because we're burning our own bridges that way. When it comes to inclusive education, though, I love the fact that the world is making this more of a priority. Fact is, educators need to be at least somewhat versed in what the needs are for a person with a disability. They have to enter into a teaching scenario saying, someday I'm going to encounter somebody who has something that makes them unique, and I need to know how to handle that, and not fly off the handle at the first sign of trouble or of provocation. For the truth is, many disabilities can be a bit of a challenge until you understand what makes them what they are. Take the child with ADHD. They'll do everything in their power to press your buttons. It may happen. And the truth is, we can respond one of two ways. Fight back in a petty attempt for dominance, or reason it out. Understand that this is one part of a personality, and we must learn how to work with it, how to respond to it. Truth is, teachers get frustrated. People get frustrated. Look beyond yourselves. You're dealing with an innocent life who has no more control over that than we have over our own eye color. This is someone who needs guidance, support, and understanding. This is not someone that we should just vent on. Same is true with narcissism, really. We must look at it from a standpoint of human decency and compassion. It is a mental health problem. It is coming from a place where this person can't help it. They're doing what they can to build up walls around the frightened, fragile human being inside. And they don't seem to realize assuming superiority, lording yourselves over others, neither breeds goodwill nor compassion. If you say, this is my need, how can you help me fulfill it? You come at it from a place of honesty instead of defensiveness. Maybe someone will take the time to reach out and understand you. Speaking of reaching out, if you want to reach out to the show, write HandyLink 4, HandyLink, the numeral 4, gmail.com. Always love your stories, folks. Now, I wanted to do this episode on narcissism because it's all too common and all too infrequently discussed. We stop and think about it, there's someone in our lives who's just been that kind of arrogant, that kind of presumptuous. Maybe not to the extremes described, but there's been that someone who just considered themselves more important than us. Nothing can be more damaging to a person with a disability than saying, my life matters more than yours. It really doesn't. No one life is more valuable than another. We all have goodness in us. We all have something to contribute. The more we remember that, the more we grow as a community. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.